Welcome to Family by Design, a weekly radio program brought to you by Wellspring Christian Family Schools, the education ministry of WCF Church, located in Sebillesville, Maryland. We hope that today, in some way, we will help you to treasure God's design for your family.
Because the greatest gift a father can give is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children. He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus.
Welcome to Family by Design. I'm Joel Fisher, and I'm glad that you again turned your dial in to listen to this installment of Family by Design. I'm joined in the studio once again by Pastor, and really more Pastor this time, Gary Cox. Gary, I'm
glad you're here. Good to be here. Thank you.
We have been discussing the ramifications of the recent same-sex marriage decision from the Supreme Court. The culture, we've been talking about Daniel, the biblical example of how to live in a culture that is antithetical, is hostile to Christianity, hostile to truth. And today we are going to turn our attention to how is this new era, really, of cultural demise in our nation's history going to directly affect the role of the church and the role of the Christian community, and particularly of pastors.
Right. I think you've divided it up there into three little segments. So we have the role of the church, which does have some prominent considerations for pastors and the ministries of the church, and then that second element, just the Christian themselves and how they're going to live deliberately, authentically, without hypocrisy. And then also how we're going to interact in the culture at large, which is changing and which we will be presented with and needing some form of clear response to in that setting.
Right. Gary, you're a pastor. You've been a pastor for over
38 years.
38 years, so close to 40 years. You've been a pastor in every sense of the word. You have done it all. And one of the things that you do is weddings and marriage counseling. So this is a very poignant, personal, directive change that is going to impact you. And how do we take the lessons that we've kind of laid down from Daniel? How do we take that and bring it into specifically the role of the church, particularly for you in church leadership and the ministry you have, which includes the ministry of marrying people.
Right.
And now we have a very real possibility, very real scenario of a couple, same-sex couple, coming to you and asking you to do their wedding. And what are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, what we were talking about in the last broadcast, authenticity requires being intentional. You do something that is considered appropriate, moral, necessary, etc. You do that because you are compelled to do that from your service to the Lord. The scripture commands it, your understanding of it. And so I want to divide just a little bit between the pastor in that singular sense of the word and then the church ministry that the pastor is serving in. And there is a distinction because the structure of function and organization a lot of times is going to fall to the church in terms of having established policy, practice, procedure, etc. But the pastor himself also has to have that sense of clarity with what is his sense of purpose and what he's doing and why he's doing it and how he's doing it. So in talking about those two things, it may be appropriate to just share an anecdote where once upon a time as a pastor, I was asked to do a wedding, and it was a couple that my wife and I knew socially. They weren't a part of our church, and they were people that we loved. My wife babysat the gal's children. Her first husband had passed away, and this was going to be a second marriage, and so they honored me by asking me to consider doing their wedding. Now, I have always valued scriptural purpose of marriage and the wedding from that narrow perspective of what the scripture preaches and teaches. So as a pastor, I was always deliberate what a wedding meant, how I did a wedding and why I did it, and you know what I was going to be expecting of the couple and the whole process. So
right. And if I just might interject, for those of you who want to know more fully about God's design for marriage, God's design for male and female, that is a topic we have talked about to a great extent on this broadcast. So yeah, right. I encourage you, if you not listened to especially some of our early broadcasts, please do that, and that will give you a greater context for what we're talking. Go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, amen. So anyway, this in this particular case, the non-church family was looking for a more of like a cultural favor. I was a little bit feeling awkward because I sensed that they were asking me to do them a personal favor, and they were wanting to have a religious wedding, but their view on this particular religious wedding wasn't the same as my view. So what occurred in the discussion was I recognized that this was going to be an initial wedding. They wanted a religious element to it, but they weren't real particular about what that religious element was, because they were going to have another religious wedding that in their mind was more of the appropriate or proper religious ceremony to join them as man and wife before their church. So that was awkward for me. But I remember how I handled it.
Because in a sense, you felt like you were facilitating something that was more of a purely pragmatic end, if anything else.
Well, that's one way to look at it, but that's actually, it's kind of reverse of that. What I recognized was they were coming to me to ask them a favor. But they were asking me a favor of something that was deeply held in terms of being sacred and valuable. So
it would have cheapened, in a sense, your perspective. Yeah,
my religious ceremony that I was going to conduct in my personal practice and consideration has every element that's necessary and appropriate before God to have a Christian wedding. So for them to be coming to me and asking for me to have a religious wedding that satisfied their feeling for having a little bit of religion in their wedding, but having this clarity in their own request that this is not going to be the religious wedding. We're looking to this other church to do this religious wedding. So they basically declared that their participation in my wedding service, as it were, that I would conduct for them, was not going to have the sacred element that I brought to it. And so, again, they were dear friends. The last thing I wanted to do was offend, cut off a relationship. And so I remember going over to the house and talking with them in person. And I spent a great deal of time, more than an hour. And when I was finished, I had succeeded in, and gently and clearly, and maybe with more words than I needed to, I don't know, explain that when I would do a religious wedding, it had this full sense, this full sacred sense that I brought to it. And I would not be able to bring that into an arena where somebody couldn't respect that and honor that. That would just be a devaluing of my highly held religious value, my highly held moral value. So I explained it to them in that way, and they understood and acknowledged that they couldn't give my value to that wedding for themselves because they needed their church to do that. But the thoughtfulness of taking the time to explain it was appreciated by them. And, you know, I was told, well, thank you for taking the time to explain. You could have simply said no, and that would have left us feeling somewhat befuddled and, you know, wondering why you wouldn't do it. But thanks for taking the time. But that's such a good picture of what that responsibility is. I mean, as pastors, we have to have upfront a knowledge of what are we doing a wedding for, and what will that look like? Who will we do weddings for, and what will be the premise? What will be the basis of it? And, you know, as time goes on, you cultivate and develop. I know that when I have somebody springing a wedding on me out of the clear blue, my usual, you know, parameter for doing any wedding is they're a church member or they're an intimate family member, meaning my family or one of our nieces and nephews or something like that. So there's somebody that has, they're under the range of our care. So, I mean, we just don't do weddings for because of the religious nature of it, religious value. We want to be conducting weddings with those that expect and share and honor that sense of value. The second thing of it is I've developed a 12-session premarital counseling course. So I expect the couple to take the course and do the homework, which is pretty substantial, as a part of preparation for a wedding ceremony, because the wedding ceremony itself isn't the significant event. It's the marriage that's the significant event, and God has so designed marriage to be a significant social place for developing godliness, character, bringing folks to Christ. It has such a significant role that, you know, having some basic understanding of how marriage works and what are the nature of the conflicts in marriage, that's a part of the premarital counseling that I simply require. I'm not a service, a wedding service, as it were. So, but here's what I mean by sincerely held religious beliefs, being thoughtful. I thought of this before I did my first wedding.
And, right.
And for me, I'm not providing a public service for weddings. I went on our website in Frederick County the other week and discovered that there is a website out there, and there's a wedding services where you can just, you know, plug in a request and you can get a minister for your wedding, you know, just by request. And it, you know, their whole purpose is to just be there as a service. Well, that's their modus operandi. That's their vision. That's their philosophy, to be a caterer to weddings as a service. So if somebody wants to have that kind of service, then that would be where they needed to go to. But I'm not going to be in the business of providing that service. Now, in terms of using our facilities as a church for a wedding, my personally held beliefs about what weddings I'll do doesn't govern the church in terms of who they'll permit to use their to use the facilities for a wedding. And so, you know, as a rule, in 38 years, we've never used our church for a wedding. our facilities aren't really adequate for
and
weddings.
There is some history behind that, of
right?
Course.
But for weddings, I do have 10 children, and we've done quite a few weddings so far. And I will say, for the weddings that we've done, you know, with our daughters at least, you know, we've had to shop around in the Frederick community for churches, and so we've come across the pattern that people that churches have. And in the early years, we could find a lot of churches that would lend us their facilities, but as time has worn on, the facilities are being more and more limited to members only, or for you to become under their total jurisdiction, meaning you do their premarital counseling, their pastor does the wedding, and, you know, and you conform to that denominational
right
element.
And that's something that my wife and I experienced in the last, well, we've been married almost a year, so in the days leading up to our wedding, we experienced that sort of policy. And of course, at the time, and perhaps this is where is a good illustration of the short-sightedness of us as believers, that always irritated me to begin with because, well, come on, we're a Christian couple, we're interested in marrying, but on the flip side of things, there really is prudence being demonstrated by those in pastoral leadership. They're not shunning a Christian couple who wants to get married as much as they are preserving their ability to honor what God says about marriage. And perhaps that's to tie into what we talked about last week, and as we're emphasizing here, the idea that Christians need to be thoughtful and pastors need to be thoughtful about this situation. I am reminded of Romans chapter 12, verse 1 and 2, particularly verse 2, says, "And be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God." It seems like the pressure is going to increase on those in leadership, those in Christian leadership, those pastors, to capitulate to the dictates of the world. And we're aware of that, but really it seems like the necessity is, are we really aware of where it touches us specifically? And what you've just articulated as a pastor, you started thinking about this before you even did one wedding, which was, when was the first wedding that you did? How many years ago was that?
Probably 30-something.
So 30-some years ago, even though there was lots of cultural upheaval at that point in time, of course, we were a long ways away from where we are today, and that you had already started thinking that. That's the kind of thoughtfulness that perhaps is not there. Although maybe it is there more than we think, but in this particular setting.
Well, I certainly think that it's going to be there more now. I mean, you really have to be thoughtful. I mean, we're being presented with the prospects of intrusion, where people are going to imagine that they have a right to demand our services. And so this is where we sort of have to let the rubber meet the road. And maybe I can just talk about that a little bit from a standpoint of not only the church and the pastor, but maybe get that principle out there in general. There's two issues. There's the religious element, and I do weddings exclusively for the religious element.
Now, when you mean the religious element, maybe you
God's
need to find
design
out
for
more.
The family. You can listen to all the broadcasts. You can go
right,
back.
Right, which we've
the
talked
idea.
About this, as opposed to the civil institution, which has just most recently been defined as two people who want to marry each other, no matter who they are.
Right, and the social institution is the governing laws that relate to social structure, family, children, and the like, and so those things are impact based upon that particular nature of the regulation. So in that context, it's valuable to understand that the wedding license that the Supreme Court ruled on is a construct of the state. But the state has no ability to establish, ordain, or impact actual marriage itself. Because marriage is something that God designed and God created, and He designed it and created it from the beginning. Jesus kind of reiterated it when a question of divorce was asked Him. He said, from the beginning, it wasn't so, but, He's talking of divorce, but God made them male and female. So that's the definition of marriage by the Creator. And therefore the two shall become one flesh, and what God has joined together, let no man put asunder. So the spiritual definition of marriage is that God Himself has joined husband and wife together, and man has no authority whatsoever to contradict, interdict, intervene, or in any way attempt to reorganize the definition of marriage. That's simply a fact of creation. The legal construct, what society might offer in terms of guidelines and governances relating to family, what have you, those laws and those rules pertain to the stipulation of whatever their definition of marriage is, and they have nothing to do with the ultimate reality of what marriage is. So for me as a pastor, there's a dividing line, and here's a little interesting perspective which is helpful. If as a pastor, what makes a marriage, as you conduct a wedding, what makes a marriage? Well, if you look biblically at the history of it, what makes a marriage is the deliberate intention and the following through of that intention to take a wife. In the scriptures, in the Old Testament primarily, I'm referring back to, there are very few wedding ceremonies pointed to. I mean, yes, Jesus, by Jesus' day there were wedding suppers and what have you. Culturally, those things were developing. But I like to think of that accounting where in Genesis there are several illustrations of weddings that went on. In each of those cases, the bride was brought to her husband and she came into his tent and became his wife, and that was it. It was the intentionality and the terms of that public declaration, and then the actuality. They consummated the marriage. So the intention and the consummation made a marriage. Now, from a cultural standpoint, what makes a marriage? From a cultural standpoint, what makes a marriage is a signed document, piece of paper that says you're married. So that legal document is where all the force and the power of states' rights and issues are ushered from. So think of it in this respect. The rights, from a cultural standpoint, are conferred by the legal document. But the actual status of marriage, as it was created by God, is established
still
in light
same.
Of...
still the same.
And that's the same. So, as a little humorous anecdote, what if you had a young man forget to get the marriage license till the last minute? And so, the day of the wedding, he rushes to the courthouse to get his wedding license, only to discover, like for Frederick County, there's a 48-hour waiting period before you can legally be married. So what would I do as a pastor if all of a sudden the kid shows up at the rehearsal and says, "Hey, I forgot to get the wedding license. I'm going to get it tomorrow before the courthouse closes. You know, do we have to cancel the wedding?" Now, this is what being intentional is all about. If you're looking to the state as the sole definer and arbitrator and value giver of marriage, then you would have to not have the wedding until the 48-hour waiting period occurred. But state doesn't have that authority. They don't have that right.
Right.
They just are passing on a structural legality. So you have that wedding by that declaration of intentionality, and then you bring it together, concluding it. You have that wedding before God, and then if you have to, you can take care of the paperwork a couple days down the road, but you're married from the time of the intentionality before God.
And in that perspective, you again have the thinking, are we being thoughtful? Are we being intentional? Do we know? Do we understand? And probably a lot of Christians would balk at that. They would, you know, and even that's part of us needing to reevaluate and think, are we going to be intentional about this?
Don't give the state power it doesn't have.
Don't render to Caesar the things that are not
Caesar's. That's right.
Are not Caesar's. Well, we are out of time in this portion of our discussion. Hopefully we've generated some thoughts. If you're a pastor and you're listening to this broadcast, we would love to hear from you, your own thoughts, your own perspectives, as you're facing these times. Or if you're just an everyday listener who wants to know more, we encourage you to, first of all, listen to our previous broadcasts at WTHU.org, the audio vault. Look for Family by Design in the header. You can listen to our broadcasts. Or you can also write to us at radio@wcfs.edu. We'd love to hear your feedback about these broadcasts and any other questions and inquiries you might have. I would encourage you to continue to keep your Bible handy. If you have a Bible, please read the book of Daniel as we're having these conversations. Next week, we're going to be delving into what it means to be a Daniel, to be like Daniel in the civic arena. We hope you can join us next week on Family by Design as we treasure God's design for your family.
Pass him on to your children. He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus. Someday the house will crumble, and time will turn the land to dust. And when all accounts are empty, where will you invest their trust? But if the riches that you give them is the wisdom of his ways, then the wealth you'll leave your children will last through all their days. 'Cause the greatest gift a father can give is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children. He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus. Someday the house will crumble, time will turn the land to dust. And when all accounts are empty, where will you invest their trust? But if the riches that you give them is the wisdom of his ways, then the wealth you'll leave your children will last through all their days. 'Cause the greatest gift a father can give is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children. He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus. Is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children. He's the gift that keeps on giving.
Thanks for spending your time with us today here at Family by Design. Join us every Sunday when we will continue this wonderful journey, helping you to treasure God's design for your family.
'Cause the greatest gift a father can give is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children. He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus.